It's running a follow-up group. I think the timing of this is probably quite good because you're all just about to run a follow-up group. And I sent you some notes I wrote years ago, a little bit tongue-in-cheek sometimes or whatever. I can't honestly remember. My style then sometimes comes and jumps me and I think, oh dear, no, did I really write like that? And so maybe the best thing to say is you've all, I hope, had a follow-up session from your basic AT, but of course we've all learned it in such different circumstances. Maybe we're not quite sure. Let's have a dialogue about it. What do you think a follow-up session is for? Shall we start with that question and see what people think about that?
So we need to know how our clients are getting on with whatever they have learned so far, and whether they need to make any adjustments, or I don't know. Sorry, I haven't run a follow-up session. Perhaps it's going to happen in the next few weeks, so
No, this is really nice. I mean, you're thinking about it, and
yes.
yeah, of course, it's a check-in, isn't it, for the client?
Yes, and
Definitely.
perhaps we can receive some feedback, you know. I think feedback is very, very important.
Well, you can't know, can you, without feedback?
True,
Okay.
true.
Oh, that's true enough. So really, we're looking at the purpose. Why are we doing this? Do they need any adjustments, you said, Sebastian? Would anyone have an idea of why something might be going on that might need attention?
Well, you want to have them so they keep the structure
Yes. So we're
correct
going
way.
to check their procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably that would happen as soon as you did an exercise, actually, which is probably a good idea to do right at the start.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I mean, I don't know how to run them, but I'll do, like we do in the other sessions, start off
Absolutely.
with the whole thing
Yes,
and
keep
then
to that structure. It's familiar and
yeah.
yes.
Just check on the progress and any worries or anything that has come up or
What
see
might
how.
happen, of course, is that people have already contacted you if that has happened. So you might have had an exchange of email or phone or something with them if anything immediate has happened for them. But yes, that's quite right. There is another more subtle reason. I shouldn't have used the words more subtle because that would put the wind up you. But we all are aware of autogenic process just being completely random, aren't we? And so it could be that things which might have been addressed during their original course actually start popping up and showing themselves. And it's unsettling to the client. So, of course, yes, they would be having some worries or some difficulties. And it's a good idea to, what would you do in that case?
Definitely not, oh, that's terrible, but you will just be nonchalant about it
Absolutely.
and supportive
Oh,
and direct them in, to passive concentration and accept the process that they have.
I think invariably, when that sort of thing happens, actually it's the offloading. And people have very often forgotten all about the offloading. Everybody comes to learn autogenic training and their whole concept of it, the whole idea of it is like this. And if we're resistant to doing the offloading, which we've already talked about earlier today, they won't have done anything of that kind. And if something has come and hit them between the eyes, some family event, could be a bereavement, which would just what we might tie in with something else, or something has happened to them. And let's use the word upset. And then often people will say, I've been so upset this has happened and that's happened and I'm feeling whatever. And then talk through it a bit, see what's coming out from them, see what they are reporting. And then, have you done any offloading about this? What? Of the offloading exercises? Oh, do you mean all that anger stuff? Oh no. And then, so that might be the opening to say, actually, I think it's a good idea to revisit some of this. So let's just go back again, then backtrack, and then sort of have a go at their story again. And as they tell their story again, you can pick up how they are speaking, what is likely to be something. Ask them. So what's going on for you here? It's sounding like this is a very difficult situation. What's that feeling like? Just like we've been talking about today anyway. Mm-hmm. And then it could be at this point that the person resistant to the offloading actually begins to think, ah, I've missed something here. That sounds like a good idea. So that's really, quite honestly, by saying just those things, we've covered the follow-up session. I don't know, Donna, you're going to follow me up there and say, well, actually.
No, I think that I always ask if they've been using their personal motivational formula, if they are, how's it working, if there are any problems. And again, people go, huh, what? Oh, yeah, or I've been using this, so when are you using it? Let's check the words out and we can recap those. The other thing I do talk about is the neutral state, because although I do talk about that in the last session, maybe half the people are like, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Mm. So I recap it in the refresher or the follow-up, whatever you want to call it, because then they've had another 2 months of doing their AT and they might then know what I'm talking about. And then I can sort of draw on that with the personal motivational formula as well, because obviously that's the ideal time to drop that in. So I cover all of that again as well.
Yes. Thank you so much. And of course, what I was saying there was not that we wouldn't cover all these things, but I didn't make that clear at all. But the real essence is what's going on for you now, what is happening. And of course, you know, do those reminders. And then, yes, the personal motivational formula. I don't know about you, but I find that many people have forgotten all about them. They haven't used them at all. They don't really interest them. And that's fine. Because if what they need out of autogenics is already there in their standard exercises, they don't need a personal and motivational formula necessarily. Wow. Why is that wow, Pierre?
I'm surprised. I think it's magic.
Well, oh, yeah.
Absolutely magic, but a lot of people don't take to them. Is that right?
Well, they're not compulsory.
Yeah.
So I love teaching them because they are very, you know, they're very, what's the word? The concept of them is just extraordinary, really, thing that we're offering into this powerful state. We are offering something other. And on the whole, people like the idea while we're talking about it, but in reality, they don't use them very often. What about you, Donna? Do you?
Half and half, I think, really. Some don't bother because they forget about them. Then they're in their autogenic state thinking, oh, this is where I'd put it and I didn't get it. I haven't got one. I don't know what to use.
Yeah.
So, again, with the follow-up session, with the neutral state, I would say to them, perhaps just use I'm at peace. That's a nice time to just put the I'm at peace in. Then it saves you thinking, because sometimes you can come back and know exactly where you are because you can hear your brain saying it. So you just drop in and off you go. And other times you can come back and think, oh, I don't know where I was.
Yeah.
So if you haven't got a personal motivational formula, that's when I would just say, I would just drop I am at peace in, go around again if you want to, or you've done I am at peace, just come out and close. So depending on how you feel.
Because the neutral state, of course, is nothing more than staying in the autogenic state. In fact, it's a very deep one. Mm. So nobody has to complete that exercise unless, as you say, they find themselves picking it up and that's what they want to do. So I'm at peace is not only a very useful affirmation at that point, but it's also the completion of the exercise.
Yeah, exactly.
So there we go. Yeah. Mm. So those are reminders. Yes. Yeah.
May I ask you a question, Jane? With people, are there a lot of them in your experience, all of your experience, that they drop off and they don't do it so much? So they lose.
Oh, yes. Yes,
really?
There's always the joke that when we finish the introductory exercise, and especially if it is a group, which we have at the hospital, and so everybody's saying, oh, hi, it's lovely to see you again and everything else. And sometimes one person said recently, I've only come because I'm curious about everybody else. But he had dropped off his exercises, hardly doing anything, but also saying, I feel an awful lot better. I'm so glad I did this course and thank you very much.
Mm.
And he wasn't interested in picking up the threads or anything. It was quite easy. He just said, I'm just curious about everyone else. But anyway, when we've done the exercise on arrival and I've led it through, and then as everybody's closing afterwards and we're all having a bit of a stretch, that's when I say, so for how many of you was that the first exercise you did since we last met?
Hmm.
And is this going to be a confessional session? So everybody laughs at that point because we know what human nature is like. So we might as well just sort of take the bull by the horns and ask the question. And then, of course, then the go round happens as usual, what people have been doing. And it's really nice to hear that people have been keeping it up. But my aim at the end of the course, and I'm always careful to say that, you know, going back, just at the very end of the course, my aim is to keep you going. So if you don't do it three times a day, that really doesn't matter. If you don't always do the whole complete exercise, that really doesn't matter. Sometimes you can just do the hold exercise and then perhaps a couple of other phrases if you want to. And it's quite important to give people the freedom to do that and play with it a bit and make it their own. Mm-hmm. So this is where we can start to break the rules. So the only rules that you really, really, really must keep is that when you come out of an autogenic exercise, you really, really must close. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I hope you'll agree, Donna and Patricia, it really doesn't matter what goes on in between.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah,
doesn't.
I think people like the freedom of that, really. You can rehook them.
Yeah.
That sometimes, can't you?
Because yes.
They can't do it three times a week. But I could just do it like once at night or do what you like with it, really.
Yes. Absolutely. And if you feel you want to do more, then it's up to you to make the time to do that. You know, it's not a question of can't, it's a question of managing.
Yeah.
I think people who stop doing the intentional exercises and the motivational formulas, it's very often because things are just okay for them. They are often doing the autogenics every day.
Yeah.
And so they feel fine and they don't bother. And then often, in the follow-up, or sometimes I bump into people and they want to chat, you know, in the street or something, and they then start complaining about certain things. And I say, are you doing any of your intentional exercises? I forgot about them. And then they contact me a couple of weeks later. I start doing them again. It's really great. So it's a bit like, you know, people who go to the gym and then if they have a break, they're really hard to get back in again. I think it works in a similar way to that. So sometimes those little nudges get them going again.
You're quite right. The nudges, that's what it is. And I don't know how you're finding the hospital ones, Donna, but people always say this has been so useful. It's been really nice. I feel I've come back to it.
Yeah. I also find that some of them, because they've dropped off and then they get panicky thinking, oh, God, I've got to go right back to the start.
Uh-huh.
But actually, then you can have the conversation and everybody know and say, well, actually, you could, if you wanted to, just get into it with a few short stitches. But I think you'll be surprised that once you get into it, your brain already knows what it's doing and you'll find you'll just go with it anyway. And and if I do hear from them again, that is usually what's happened.
Mm.
Or people I've heard from sort of years later, they haven't done it, but then something's happened and they found themselves in an MRI machine or something and they've gone, do you know what? I just started doing my AT. It just came back to me.
Because
it's in there.
Yes, coupled with the, well, while I'm in this machine, I can't do anything else. I might as well do AT. And it's that kind of little droplet of, actually, I might as well do it in lots of different places, but I hadn't thought about it before. So, yes, might as well is quite a nice little thing to throw in there.
Good at the dentist, I find.
Absolutely.
I do, yeah.
Yes, and I had my cataracts done. And that was they did both eyes on the same day, which was brilliant, but the surgeon went and took a phone call between each eye, so I was a bit cross. But anyway, but he said after the first eye, he said thank you to me. And I said, I think I ought to be saying thank you to you. After all, he's the one who's done the work. And he said, it takes two to tango. So I was just about to say, oh, well, I was doing an autogenic exercise, so maybe the whole procedure was easier for you to carry out. Oh, no, he walked off. And so that was the end of that. But he came back and did the other eye and all was well. So, yes, it is extraordinary in the most extraordinary circumstances we might find ourselves in, having some procedure, whether it's an MRI or local anaesthetic or whatever it is, how on some level or another we can just click the switch just to get into some altered state. It won't feel the same as your ordinary exercise, of course it won't, but we don't expect it to either. The brain knows exactly what's happening and what it's doing. And just a few right arm heavies just going over and over again, so you haven't got to think too hard as well.
Wow, I'm so surprised to hear people really drop off and don't do it. I'm really surprised.
Really. Drop off,
I know,
and don't
human
do
nature. I think it's just because I love it so much and it has been with me for so long that I just couldn't imagine my life without it.
No.
That's all. Yeah.
Well, actually, I think the people who might have dropped off actually want to get back into it. And that's why they've come to the refresher. Otherwise, they could have rung you up and said, you know what, it's not really for me. I'm just going to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
and that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't
that makes sense.
Anything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if they want to be there, then something's happened. And that's the bit to discuss, isn't it? How long did you keep it going for after the course ended? And very often it's, oh, well, Christmas happened. And then after that, I realized it was February and I hadn't done any. And then it was hard to get back into it because I wasn't in the routine. And then da-da-da-da-da. So you can just chat around those things. And we've already had it today. You've reminded people where they might have. Somebody was doing it. Somebody, who was it who said that they'd suggested doing AT in the car? It was you, Pia. You're talking about your case study. And realizing that there were opportunities which hadn't been recognized, that sort of thing. Mm. It's all everyday stuff, really.
Yeah.
The lead through at the beginning as well, when they haven't done it, and then they say, oh, have I got to start again? Well, how was it? You've just done the whole lot. How was it? That makes people think, oh, God, yeah, actually, I did. I didn't need to go back to my right arm is heavy and go through the heaviness and then the warmth and everything, because they've just done the whole thing. So that surprises people, I think, how much they do get out of that, having think be like when they're thinking that they need to start all over again.
Yes.
And they don't.
Which is often a sort of attached, isn't it, to old guilt things about not keeping up your piano practice and getting your homework done and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly.
That can be the case.
In your experience, what is the best amount of weeks between from the last session to the follow-up? Is it 6 weeks, 2 months?
I'm actually coming to the view that the longer the better. Within reason. I mean, don't wait 6 months or anything like that. It used to be the recommended sort of 6 to 8 weeks. But actually, and at the hospital, we can't do that because of just the way the courses are structured. And so it turns out to be 3 months after. And actually, I think that's good. It takes you past the period of this is still quite new and I'm still enjoying it or whatever it might be. And it takes you perhaps quite a way past that. And so you get a real feel, and so does the person, have that real feel of maybe 10 to 12 weeks is a better idea. Things are going, and they're, you know, if they've dropped it, they will have dropped it quite a long time ago. And yes, it's quite an interesting question to ask. So, yes, you haven't been practicing for a while. Well, What's going on? How are you feeling? You may like to give them one of their pre-course questionnaires just to see if anything is different. I tend not to do that, but that's a possibility if you wanted to. I don't know what you feel about that. Because Donna, you're doing it like that now, aren't you, as well, with the longer gap between the course and the...
Yeah, I was thinking about, I might talk about this tomorrow with the research, wondering about whether to do the, like, another mime op or, you know, whatever. Because then they can compare it as well.
Yes.
And the reason that a couple of my ladies for my first refresher, that came to the refresher didn't come to the last session. So they missed the paperwork, but I gave it to them at the refresher.
Yes.
So that at least I'd got a comparison of some sorts to hand in.
Yeah.
And I think that worked quite well. I think one of them did comment and said, I'm glad I waited, actually, because it would have been exactly the same on week 8.
Yes. But
then there was a difference for the refresher.
Yes.
So whether it would be worth doing a 3-step.
Yes, it could be.
Or even across the broad.
Yeah.
But BASS as well. But I think people do have a different outlook and things do change.
Mm. And quite often, until they see that questionnaire again,
they're
not even aware of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I was going to talk to you at the hospital to say, could I do another post-assessment or whatever it's called. We've got the pre and the post, haven't we? Could I do it on the refresher as well?
Post number 2.
Yeah.
Yes, I think we ought to talk to the people who are analysing the data.
Well, that post one, that would just be for them, wouldn't it, really? But then if we wanted
as well. Or you don't need to ask permission then, they're just bits of paper.
Whether we wanted to do a 3-1 as well. But that's probably on a to-do list somewhere in another notebook.
Yes, indeed.
Mm.
Hello, Bev. Have you stayed with us?
Oh, hello. I'm so sorry about the disruption. I only got to hear the first bit when I was cleaning, and then I needed to ring the vet. So I've dealt with it. It's all good. So my husband's taking over on his way home. So that should be fine, providing we don't have any more accidents. So, apologies. But
I feel for you. Oh, gosh. I think
16-year-old dog. She's a grand old age, but you know, she's special needs now. Just picking up what the back end of that conversation, I suddenly realized I wanted a question, you know. In the follow-up forms that we might use, for me, I use the standard pre-course and post-course self-assessment form, which I won't get to see unless in the follow-up the client wants to talk about it. But I use like the MyCore form. What if, like, what would be a good approach to deal with if what the client writes about kind of how she feels is actually worse at the end of the course? You know, if it's worse, she feels less happy or more stressed just because of what's going on in her life.
Mm. Yeah, I think I would question exactly that. Sorry, Jane, as to it, because it might not have anything to do with the AT. It might have, you know, if somebody died or a divorce or, you know, some life event that would shake anybody. So it might not be AT related.
Yeah, have you ever had that case where you've used the HADs or the MIMOPs or anything like that, and their symptoms are worse, not because necessarily,
the scores are worse or increased or whatever.
And how does that impact the client and how they feel?
Well, it's more than that. It's also, what are you noticing from that? Because it could be to do with autogenic training if it hasn't been a sort of particular life event, but people are saying, I'm feeling much worse now. Then there is something that's missing in their autogenic process, and perhaps they need to do offloading, which perhaps they have been resistant to during the course, and then AT hasn't helped them. They've come back to you. Have they dropped the practice? It's quite likely that in that circumstance they have dropped the practice because they are aware that they're not feeling so good. So it's not even worth doing the autogenics anymore. So actually, a little bit of revisiting, and I find it the very powerful thing to do, is our good friend, the short stitch, and take them back to short stitch. You might well have opened your session by leading them through a full exercise. But then actually, I do follow that up by reminding people of all the things. You've got that complete package sheet, haven't you? Which is just that summary of everything that somebody has learned in the course. I say, let's go back to that. You don't need to get it out particularly. But look, let's do some short stitch now. What's short stitch, they'll say? Well, you can now describe it in much more power than you could in week one. You say, don't forget that the phrase, my right arm is heavy, is the trigger phrase for getting into the autogenic state. So to use that on its own can be really quite useful. It's so short, and that's all you've got to do. So then lead them through one, and then get them to do another two or three by themselves. And when they come out of that, you may well find that they've found that extraordinary fast to get them into a different place, and actually quite a relief, as Donna was saying, you know, nothing is forgotten actually. And so they're thinking, oh yeah, I can do that. If I've only got to do a little short one, I can do those, that's fine. Then remind them of, I think I called it a mid-stitch on that complete package sheet, but it is simply, my right arm is heavy, followed by my arms and legs are heavy and warm, maybe three or four times, and close. But that's a much more meaty exercise, and I use that term advisedly, arms and legs, heavy and warm. There's a lot in that sentence. So right arm heavy, and then arms and legs heavy and warm, repeated three, four, five times, and then close and do that maybe three times. So I always revise those short exercises. And then the one that, which is the hold exercise, right arm heavy, arms and legs are heavy and warm, maybe several times, and then neck and shoulders, and I'm at peace. And that too is quite a substantial exercise, but it misses out the whole of the middle section. So at that point, I'm saying, actually, I always put the breathing one in there because I like that one, but you might prefer one of the others and you want to put that in there or whatever. So it's just the indicators for how to be flexible. But to come back to your question, Bev, if someone is worse, their scores are worse, the client themselves is quite likely to say, I'm not surprised about that, because this has happened and that has happened, just the things that Donna has been talking about. And then we can say, well, yes, it's not surprising then, is it? And you're not doing your practice either. And that's not surprising. You've had your head full of all this other stuff and everything else. So let's try and get back into at least using your short stitch when we can.
Yeah, I guess as well, it's what if they're doing their practice and their scores are worse? Then they're thinking, well, this isn't helping. Yeah, my ability to switch off my stress response. Yeah.
I would suggest that if their autogenic practice is, I'm going to call it successful, if it's easygoing, they look forward to doing it and they are engaging with it each time and they feel a little bit, what shall we say, refreshed or whatever it is afterwards, I would think it was highly unlikely that their scores would be worse. So I think it's more likely that they would be resistant to doing their practice. They would keep talking about intruding thoughts, for example. There would be some other indicator that all is not well in their AT. And that's where we need to remind them of the offloading. That actually the process is trying to happen. But the stepping stones are being missed. There's no offloading happening. And therefore, we've got to shift that. And then you will find your autogenics much easier to practice. And then you'll be back in the place where perhaps you were before. But this is all tangled up with the other life events that they might be having to deal with and so on. Or even something has happened in their life that even while they're face to face with you, they've forgotten about. And it won't be till two or three days later or a week later, they'll email you or something and say, do you know what? That was such a useful session. And I had completely forgotten the fact that, and then there's some life event that's happened. I don't know, partner lost their job or something like that, which isn't directly with them. So they might not have even thought that that was something that had impacted them. But a realization of something of that kind coming up. And then they got the tools to work with it.
I'm noticing as you're answering, Jane, that I've got some slight apprehension about getting my form back and what it might say. That's probably where my questions come from, because, you know, I'm going to receive an evaluation form back and a follow-up my core form back. Yeah, so I'm intrigued, but I'm noticing apprehension, like, what if, you know, it's not a positive outcome, and how do I deal with that, you know, without taking personal responsibility for my client's life, which is not my job, you know.
No. It's not. And if the scores are different on the adverse side, you will ask the client about that.
Yeah,
it's interesting that last time you had eights and sevens, and this time, sorry, I'm on the wrong form, aren't I? Last time you had, when you started, you were perhaps on seven or eight, or six or seven or something, on pain levels or something like that, and now it's and that's bad, and then it improved to three or four, and now it's up to the six or sevens. I wonder what's going on there. What's going on for you?
It might just highlight the fact that they haven't been doing their AT, just as simple as that.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think any of these questionnaires are not measurements of you.
Yeah.
And the clients will know that. They will know that. And there's another one which I do give at the refresher session. On the questionnaire, there are those questions about the life. You know, the ones where they score out of 20. How much did your childhood give you good preparation for? I pinched them from another questionnaire. Preparation for adult life. I can't remember what they are now.
But I think they're on the life questionnaire.
They're on the life questionnaire. That's what I'm not describing very well. And it's quite good to look at those again. And very often, the one that is about your childhood being a good preparation for adult life, very often people give that a higher score, perhaps 12 out of 20, something like, oh no, or 10 out of 20 or something. And then at refresher, that one comes out at 2. And then a good question to ask, gosh, this is quite a difference, isn't it? What's happened? And the answer is often something like, well, I've got real. I've got a new realization of actually what was going on to me when going on for me when I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I now reflect, actually, it wasn't a good preparation for adult life. And that's actually a useful realization. And maybe it's going to harness itself to some emotions, maybe some crying or something. I will always remind them of that possibility. But it's the client usually knows and knows what it's about. Well, I've stopped the conversation again.
I think those forms are good because I've worked with forms in counselling that I've had to give clients every single week. And things can change drastically, but there's no way for me or them to explain why. You know, maybe their husband's walked out or somebody's died or something, and there's no way. And so, and those forms are all sent in to be do whatever it is they do with them. You know, you think, well, why has that suddenly gone so high or so low? That gives us an idea of what's really going on with for the client, you know.
And I mean, it is meaningless if there is no notes at the bottom of those scores, just sending numbers in isn't any use at all to any it's kind of assessor, is it?
No.
It's interesting. So really, it's revisiting things, but the client will lead you very often, and you will follow where they are and pick up those dissonances with what they are describing or how they're describing it. And indeed, as we mentioned, if a personal and motivational formula is using and people say, oh, it's not working, well, obviously you're going to have a look at it. But something isn't working isn't the language we use with autogenics, really, is it? So what is something uncomfortable for you about the one you're using? What's happening? Oh, I keep forgetting it. I just keep forgetting it. I shouldn't be there. All right, you've probably got the wrong words. Your brain is saying, oi, throw it out. Let's start again. And you can revisit that. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to glance at something in a mountain of papers here that I need to be sorting out. Somebody sent me an email back in June, and I'm not going to read it all out because it's immensely long, and I don't think I've replied to it. That's why I printed it off and put it in a heap of paper. Okay, there is an email, page one and page two.
Wow.
And she starts, apologies for the long email. I was hoping if I provided plenty of information to work with, you might be able to advise me on tweaking my autogenic routine. Well, too much information. And she expects me to sort that out. Yeah. I mean, those things are a complete contradiction to what autogenic training is. And that's why I haven't replied to this. She'll get her own message from my non-reply, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm being cruel. But she's using it every day, but she's using it for results. I picked up the language straight away. One thing she says is, I use autogenics during the day for pain flares when they're bad enough to make me feel agitated. Yeah. Well, what's wrong with that?
Jane, I think we talked about this email, didn't we?
Did we?
Yeah,
before. Session. We might have done. Yeah, we might have done. Okay, thank you for stopping me. Yes.
Oh, no, I was just pointing that out.
Yeah. So, well, everybody raised their eyebrows to heaven at that, didn't they? What was wrong with what she's written?
Well, maybe she would have reduced her pain flares or, if she'd been regularly doing her AT.
Exactly. She's setting a set of conditions. That's right. That's what we did talk about. She's setting a set of conditions where she will practice when she wants a particular result. Well, that's absolutely not what autogenic training is.
Yes, she wants an outcome.
Mm. Yeah, she wants an outcome. And she's only practicing when she feels so agitated that she has to. That's nonsense.
Yeah.
She wants to be fixed. That's what it is. Without doing any work for herself.
Yes. And why has she learned autogenic training and practiced it? Well, she does it every night and follows the script. She does say that. So I would have hoped that more would have happened. But anyway, I must reply to that, or at least see if I did reply. I might have printed it off for you, Lachlan. Okay.
Sorry to interrupt, but one thing it wasn't clear for me. So when we run the follow-up session, what exactly questionnaire do we give clients to fill out?
Okay, I think it ought to be in the notes. What I have talked about, well, let's put it another way. You don't have to give any questionnaire mm-hmm. out. I think it's up to you, your interest, your client's interest, or whatever.
Okay.
If you want to use the two questionnaires that are in the life questionnaire at the very start of the course, those can be quite interesting. I've just talked about the ones, let me find it on the, I'm just going to take a little while to find it.
So the live questionnaire is the pre-course assessment, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. Okay. That is exactly what it is, with Bev's lovely new name for it. Okay, now there's a full-length page questionnaire on that, which I think is called Health Life Health Questionnaire, is it? Can't remember. Isn't that awful? It's the one with the boxes, not boxes, but the alternative answers labelled A, B, C and D.
Yeah, is the general mental health question.
Yeah, no, that's the one, yes.
Okay, okay.
Now, that's quite a good one.
Okay, okay. Yeah,
that's quite a good one to give them. So you need to manage that well. Mm-hmm. What I suggest is that you give them, obviously, a blank one. You don't give them their old one. Give them a blank one, and they do that. And then on the old one, just add up the number of A's, and then the number of B's, and then the number of C, and so on. So you've got a score that you can give them. And then when they have done the new one, sometimes it's a very easy thing to see, because all the scores, all the ticks move from the D column to the A column. And then, you know, when you show them that, they'll think, oh, God, my goodness, when you show them both of them, that's what you were like beforehand. This is what you've just done. So that can be quite revealing and very quickly satisfying. Yeah. And then if you've got that a page open, Sebastian, thank you so much for that help. On the previous page, are those questions with the scores out of 20 for each one?
Yes, yes, is the your overall view of life. Yeah,
overall view of life, that's the one. And what I sometimes give them those as well. And as Bev says, sometimes they can come out worse, but it's usually because of some event that they know.
Cool. Thank you very much for clarifying.
Those are useful. I thought that with the notes that I had, that those would have been included with the notes I sent you, but it was when we were last going to do this follow-up, so maybe I didn't. I'm going to send you then the overall view of life, slightly rearranged on two bits of paper, so that you can give them to your client. They can answer the top sheet, then they look underneath and they find their old scores. Is this possible for you to grasp? It's all too much. Overall view of life for the follow-up session. Okay. I'll make sure that that is also with the, what was the other one? The general mental
health. General mental health. Question.
Yeah. Okay. Prepare for follow-up. Okay, I will send those to you.
Thank you very much. It's very clear now, yeah.
And I think those are not ones that are going to be sent off for research or anything like that. In fact, the overall view of life has been pinched from another questionnaire, so there are copyright issues, okay? And the general mental health, I think you do need to have to pay and have the permissions to use. But if we're not publishing them and we're just using them for the patient's own assessment, there's nothing wrong with that at all, and can be very helpful to them. Anything to add, Donna?
I don't think so, actually. Mm-hmm. Bev?
Yeah, I don't know if this is helpful, and I might have missed your point, Jane, but in the follow-up notes you sent us, it's got kind of a page with the information on, hasn't it, with those questions already?
Well, that's what I thought I had sent, yes.
Yeah, so we've got the follow-up notes. It's a PDF, your overall view of life. There's a form there for printing out.
Yeah.
And, And yeah, it's got everything, the two aspects from the life questionnaire you just mentioned is in the follow-up form. So if that saves you a job, it's already there.
Well, that's great. Although
it was sent.
Yeah, I can email that to you. It was sent quite a long time ago, because I think we were meant to do the follow-up in a live.
We did.
I'll pop it in an email and copy everyone in and just send it, and then it's clear.
Then we've all got it.
That's great.
Is it useful to have a Word version?
Yes, absolutely.
It probably is, isn't it, for filling in purposes. Well, maybe it's better if I do it and do the and send out the word version. Okay, in Word. But you should find it in the notes you had. But here is the Word version. Okay, that's coming from me. That'll be easier than you doing it, Bridget. Right. But thank you very much for the offer. That's great. So really, I think the follow-up session just finds its own way through. Mm. You're following your client as usual. You'll be picking up the ways in which they're talking. Difficulty with the AT is usually about intruding thoughts. Discuss those, what's been going on in life. Remind them of the offloading. If they don't want to do it, it's still up to them. And they will say autogenic training didn't do much for me, which would be a shame. But there we go. As Luther himself said, regarding the offloading, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Mm.
And there was a German doctor telling us a very old English saying.
Mm.
I think it's Shakespeare, isn't it? I can't remember. Right. Shall we move on to finish with something? Let's make it as short as we can so that we can send Pierre to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I have got no notes for this. I'm sure we must have got some notes for this, and have we ever sent them off? No, we're just going to sort of talk about some other methodology associated with autogenic training, because what we've been focusing on is the main body of what we're doing, standard autogenic training, including the offloading exercises, carefully monitoring the process, and so on. Now, there were some offshoots of that associated with Luther and others associated in Germany. And so Patricia is far more experienced than I am in two of those. Is now a good moment just to sort of give a rough overview of those two,
Patricia? Yeah, I can do that. I think be informative, but not take too long, I think, yeah. I think that's what you're after, Jane.
It is what I'm asking. Do you want to start us off is my unasked question.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yes. If we're looking at Luther's input, there are three items. I'm looking at the timetable now.
Three.
Creativity mobilization technique,
yes.
Autogenic neutralization, and autogenic meditative exercises. Schultz,
I think, was the meditative one.
Oh, it did start there. It is Schultz. I beg your pardon. And it started with Schultz. Yeah. It did, absolutely.
I can start off, kick off with the CMT one.
Yeah. Okay.
CAT is creative mobilization technique.
Creativity.
Sorry.
Nida corrected me on that.
Yeah. And it's sometimes called mess painting, which it is, I suppose. It came up accidentally, actually, while I was doing my training. I think it was at the end of my training, more or less. And I think Nida mentioned something, and I was curious and asked about it and said, is it something that is still taught? And she said, no. But then she checked in with the education committee, and she got the go-ahead to do it. And half a dozen of us decided we wanted to do it. I found it particularly challenging because I paint pictures, and it was quite challenging for me, but I'll tell you briefly what it's about. It's, first of all, I'll have to say it's quite a commitment if you decide to do it, but I would say very worthwhile. I know everyone enjoyed it. We really enjoyed it. I found it infuriating at the beginning because, as I said, I paint, and I was being following the instructions. So it was sort of so against everything I wanted to do. But part of it is it's very much like AT. I mean, you keep a diary, what you, the feelings that you have, the experiences that you have going through the process that you follow. And being, the thing that challenged me most was what I felt like I was out of control of what I was doing, what I was producing. I was treating it like an art project, you know, like I had to end up with something attractive at the end of it, which wasn't the point at all. And anyway, we had to mix our own paints. We had to buy tubs of powder paint and mix it. I found all that a really relaxing, interesting process. It was great. The feeling it gave me, it was almost like cooking, but it was, you know, it was preparing, doing something like that with your hands. And then we had to use paintbrushes about 2 inches wide each. And I think it's about 8 different colors we had. So you're mixing all these jars of paint and you want just the right viscosity and that sort of thing.
Patricia, and I am going to interrupt. I'm so sorry. Because we haven't got the time for the personal experience. We need to know what it is. And
okay.
It's an such and such long course. This is what is involved. This is the purpose of it. Is this all right? It is a challenge. I'm hearing
that's okay.
It, yes.
Well, it's something we did monthly, and we'd meet together monthly. Yeah. The challenge for all of us was doing it, first of all. As I said, it's a commitment. But the things that I think everyone experienced were the feelings that, you know, they had, the thoughts, learning about themselves, often how they reacted to certain things. I don't know. I mean, that's as short as I can make it, if you like. I mean, I really felt it was a worthwhile thing to do. A lot of effort, but it was big results from all of us. It's
a very different style of working, isn't it? With you're working on the painting on your own. And as far as I can remember, it's at least a 2-hour session, 4 times in a week. Is that right?
Well, you're only spending 2 minutes on each painting.
Yes, 2 minutes on each painting in a great hurry. It's a mess. It's not to do with anything at all, any
it's
form
not
or
necessarily.
Anything.
I mean, you're asked to, I mean, you know, my first week, I was quite horrified at what I had to do, because you can't look at the colours of the paint that you're using, which is quite a difficult thing for someone who paints to do, to, you know, that kind of thing. So it's... well, I don't...
It's a random thing.
There's the process before, there's the painting, and there's a process after. And there's your diary, basically. And you can really look at yourself and your attitudes and your feelings through the whole process.
And the procedures around it are laid down, yes.
Yes.
But the actual course is with a group, and the group meets up every couple of weeks?
No, it's every month, I think.
Every month, okay. Well, however it's set up, I think I did it every couple. No, maybe it was a month. And the people would select the paintings they wanted to present to the group.
No, you'd have to show. We showed all our paintings.
Oh, you showed all of them. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then one thing was to pick the one that you hated the most and pin it on a wall, so you were forced to look at it. And the interesting part was that by the end of a week or something, you could actually quite like that painting, mm-hmm. or parts of it. Mm-hmm. It was quite, you know, an eye-opener, really, mm-hmm. doing the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And my attitudes and my... one of the things that you're asked to do is to take a bath, because you're probably going to be quite messy at the end of it. And that annoyed me for a start. It was like, oh, I don't like baths. I like showers. Anyway, I decided to do the bath thing, and I found it just something happened to me. I really enjoyed the bath. I closed my eyes. I had these beautiful colors, and spent ages in the bath, and then came out and put cream on myself, etc., pampered myself, something I never do. It was the whole process that really slowed me down and relaxed me and made me to a self-care routine, if you like. So that was one of the interesting things I discovered.
And isn't some of it about the progression of people's paintings and how they change the style of painting and so on over the weeks? Completely spontaneous, still not making form or anything, except that sometimes people did find themselves, again, spontaneously finding colours without, as you say, without looking at them, but then realising there were different. So that if you looked at week 12, for example, as compared with week 1, the progression was extraordinary. Yeah,
you could see things forming over the weeks, and you could see not necessarily the whole painting. We used broadsheet newspaper, so it wasn't necessarily the whole sheets. There were often images that appeared sort of almost like magic in some of the paintings and that kind of thing. Things that you hadn't consciously decided to paint, but some beautiful things did come up through the spontaneity. In fact, I was asked, not from anyone in the group, obviously, and someone else that was part of the group, people were interested in buying these paintings. I haven't got any to show you. I mean, at some stage, I have got photographs of quite a few of them that I could show if anyone is interested. Mm. But, so they were, that was quite interesting to be offered, that someone wanted to buy something that I had hated initially. So it was a very interesting process, hugely interesting.
Thank you. And it's, yes, Bev.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Patricia. I'm curious, did it increase your creativity? Because is that what it's designed to do, this creativity mobilization technique? Do you become more creative or imaginative through it?
I don't know for everyone. For me, I'm always doing something. I'm always painting or making something or recycling something or whatever. So it didn't like make me more creative, I would have thought. But it certainly made me more relaxed. It made me also more relaxed about the things, my other things that I did on purpose. I was much more relaxed about what I was producing. It did make a change in my activity, my creativity, I suppose. You're right, yeah.
And maybe with a lot of these things, the answer would be yes, but because you're in there and doing it and so on, you're not in the moment. You're not necessarily thinking, I'm far more creative today than I was 2 weeks ago. It isn't sort of like that, is it?
It's not like that.
It wouldn't be as clear cut, of course not.
No, I'm thinking very, very long term, that I realised I was much more, because before that, before I did the CMT, I was always criticising my own. I was a very harsh critic on my stuff, and I destroy a lot of stuff. Mm. It stopped me destroying my paintings, which was a good thing.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just curious. You talk about painting, but what exactly were you painting? I mean, were you trying to replicate something or just randomly whatever is?
I do all sorts of things. I haven't got a sort of a particular genre or anything that I finished. Okay. I mean, I do abstract. I sometimes do...
I think you're asking about CMT, aren't you? That painting,
yes, the creativity mobilization.
It is actually just using paint all over a piece of old newspaper.
So it's not actually you need to create something. You need to replicate.
No, you're not trying to create something.
And you're doing it fast, no more than 2 minutes on each page, and there is supposed to be no paper showing through, that you have covered it completely with paint. And that is put to dry, and then you pick up your next piece and you do the next one. And then that one is put to dry and you do the next piece, and then that is put to dry and so on. And that is how one session of CMT is done. And you might do 15, 16 or more, I think it might be more, paint call them pictures, call them bits of paper in a session. And so by the time you've done a lot of these, and if you're only meeting every month, you might have at least 200 bits of paper to carry to your next meeting, which is why when I did it, we just chose the best, or the best, but the most interesting to us, 6 or 7 to show and present to the group and see what they do. You did, obviously did it differently. And that's
well, we didn't do that. And I didn't there because we didn't.
We'll have to move on, actually. We've had 15 minutes on this.
Okay.
And if we're going to be 15 on all of them, we won't be finishing on time, let alone early for Pierre. Okay. Thank you very much. That's brought back a lot of memories for me. Yes. We'll talk about Luther's curious attitudes in that. Talking then more about another method, which is autogenic neutralization. These are offshoots of basic AT. All of them require learning basic AT first. And then if something is still going on or somebody is curious about how they are going with their autogenics or what other things they might like to do, they can do, this is another method called autogenic neutralization, which shouldn't be started for at least 6 months after they finish their basic AT, and they should still be practicing their basic AT. And in that setting, the therapist is working with the client. Eventually, the client can do this work for themselves. But in a darkened room and lying down in the horizontal posture, the therapist is leading the client through the heaviness exercise. The client then does not come out of it, does not close, and it's an extended session which lasts for as long as it lasts. It's, ideally, it's not supposed to be timed. Of course, it's bound to be timed, but there is no particular limit. The idea is that it is a self-contained session which is led by the client. The client will start to talk while their eyes are closed and they're in an autogenic state. And it is about what's going on in the body, what the feelings are. Something pops into their mind, so they talk about that. It's as best as possible unedited. And the other element is to record it. Now, that used to be done on cassettes. And then at the end of the session, the client would take the cassette home and make a transcription of it. Now, that's very laborious. I mean, not only are you listening to the whole recording, which might be an hour plus, including the silences, that's really interesting. Because in making the transcript, the client, having made that recording in that session anyway, will know what was going on in their minds, which was not spoken about. And they might add that into a column on the side of the bit of paper, say, actually, I was thinking about this or that or the other during that silence. And then they might pick up with something to speak again. The therapist plays the part of simply sitting beside them. If the silence is too long, they might pop a question in. Anything going on at the moment? What's going on at the moment? But very often, the client, especially when they get used to this way of working, they might revisit past traumas. They might be into quite difficult moments. They might have some emotions coming up that are quite strong. And of course, nobody would interfere with that. We would assist them more than anything else. So the role of the client is actually as the facilitator of that altered state. And I always remember Luther's description, or maybe it was in one of his books, which said, you know that you've come to the end of the session when all the difficulties and all the imagery and perhaps the black colours and the thunder clouds or other things are going on for the poor person who is actually reliving, say, a car accident. And we know that they have finished their work for that day when they report, oh, now I can just see myself. I'm just coming up to the crossroads where the accident happened. And, it's a lovely sunny day. and I'm seeing a cat just strolling across the road. So I'm stopping my car and letting the cat cross over the road. And so the therapist might say, and so how are things now? And the client will say, it's fine. All is well. And that is the moment where the session ends and the client and the therapist says, okay, we will close and come out now. And then a brief discussion at the end and how the client is feeling afterwards. And then they go home with their cassette and make the transcript. It's extremely time-consuming work. I used to work with it a lot, but times have changed. People don't have that kind of time for this. And I'm more and more in favour of just sticking with basic AT. I have done the work on myself, of course. I've been a client. It's been absolutely extraordinary and fascinating. But that's the basis of autogenic neutralization. Having said that,
sorry, I'm just curious. Is just a deeper state of AT, or is something else? It's like
I couldn't possibly tell you whether it's deeper or not. All we are in it's extended period, definitely an extended period, significantly longer.
And is the client aware of what is he experiencing? What is he talking or not?
The client is talking, absolutely. And talking about, I mean, my own first experience was to complete silence at the beginning because I thought I ought to be getting into something really important. But all I could think of was the piano pupil that I was teaching the piano. And it was about 10 minutes before I said, I don't know what this is about. I can only think of the piano pupil that I'm talking, that I'm is causing me difficulty at the moment. And so the therapist said, oh, well, what about that then? Let's talk about that. And of course, it was an issue that was going on inside me, which was presented to me with something else. And so I didn't know that. So that's an example. It can go every which way. And the therapist only picks up what is coming from the client. And another time I had a feeling of my head banging hard on a hard surface. And I knew immediately what that was about, and I could talk about it, and it was something from my childhood. And the idea is, Luther would say, this is a method where the disturbing potency of past trauma can be neutralized, hence its name. But we mustn't forget that in basic AT, that is also what is happening when people are experiencing their discharges and their emotions are coming up with them. They might not be aware of them as clearly as doing extended periods of AT. But given that people don't really have time for it anymore, basic AT, we must always hold on to that principle. We are neutralizing the disturbing potency of past trauma. So that's in a nutshell, autogenic neutralization. It isn't a nutshell, it took quite a long time. Okay.
Thanks for sharing. Really, really interesting.
Where are we? And the meditative exercises, which came from Schultz. A brief overview. Patricia, do you want to do that? Or because you've trained in these? I mean, you've trained to teach these. That's what I mean. Or not?
Well, I mean, it's just a case of, I mean, I don't mind if you want to do it, Jane. I'm quite happy for you to do it.
I'm. My eye is on the time. Maybe we pick it up when we do our extra day. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah. Let's hold on.
We could do it that way. Yeah. Or just in a very brief summary. Well, just the very briefest.
Is that a group would work together. They would have needed, obviously, to have done AT and be practicing still AT. There are 7 exercises learnt usually with a month in between, and they all have sort of different things about colours or feelings or all sorts of things, sometimes just focusing on an object in their mind and that kind of thing. Again, keeping a diary as to what's going on, very similar, and not trying to AT, you know, just sort of observing, not trying to change anything, not judging anything that may come into your consciousness, that sort of thing. I mean, briefly, that is it.
Am I right in thinking that at the beginning, an autogenic training exercise is done? Is that right?
Oh, yes,
and
yes,
then they lead into the meditative. Yeah.
You start. And you'd probably, the whole thing would take probably at least 40 minutes. And it's recommended people try to do it every day, which I think is probably difficult for a lot of people to 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's time.
Doing it, but that is what is recommended.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. You're mute.
My apologies. I did the course with Nita, just her and me, and it was profound. And one of the reasons why I actually has moved and got out of the place where I live in now was because of what came out of the information.
The meditative.
Interesting. It was because the last one is if I remember right, is about a person, or you visualize people. And I learned so much out of that. It just changed everything. And I was not aware of it. It just processed on its own. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not living the place where I lived. So I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Did you do answers from the unconscious?
Pardon?
Answers from the unconscious. Did you do that?
Yeah. Really, it blew my brains out, I must say. It was fantastic. But a commitment as well.
Do you still do it?
Yeah, because I've been in a practice for many years with Zen meditation, which is really the 80s state anyway. So it hasn't been, because it's just a part of my life that I do that.
That's good. Yeah,
I loved it. I would love to be trained in it, to be a therapist in it, because I think it's so valuable, so valuable. I loved it. Yeah.
And just then, to very quickly touch on, because I'm certainly not an expert in this, but Professor Vollnerfer, who has died fairly recently, well, in the last few years, I think. He came and did some wonderful presentations to us over the years. And he devised Advanced Analytic Autogenic Training, AAAT. And it's not too dissimilar to the autogenic neutralization. I think he and Luther, on opposite sides of the world, were kind of reaching similar sort of places with this. And this would be done in a group. An autogenic exercise, and then everybody sits quietly without coming out of the state, just allowing whatever is coming up. Nothing said, nothing spoken, nothing directed. And that would be, 20 minutes or something like that. And everybody would come out of it, and then they would share their experiences. Again, no judgment, nothing else, and all the principles in place. But the story that really stuck with me was when Vollnerfer said once that a young lad was there and so on, and everybody was sharing their experience. And this guy, when it was his turn, he said, yes, it was a lovely experience. I was surrounded by snakes, and they were crawling all over me and all over my feet and so on. And the whole group were horrified. And we're saying, but that sounds horrible. You know, what are we doing? He said, no, my parents bred snakes. I've lived on a snake farm all my life, and snakes are my friends. And I was just spending a little time at home. And he probably knew he was going to shock everybody, of course. But but that's a really telling experience too. Be careful. We don't assume that something is a difficult experience or whatever else. We are always going to ask our clients. That's why that story has stuck with me, because it is so easy. I hate snakes. I'd have hated to have been there on that day. And but for that young man, perfect.
Wow. Jen, can we read about this? Is there books about this? Or
I haven't seen anything. I think if Volnova wrote anything, it would be in oh, wait a minute, I'm thinking. It would be in German if it was anything published. I'll see if I can dig out, because he did give us very, very full notes about quite a lot of stuff. I will see what I can dig out. Of course, we haven't got it digitized, but I think... but I wrote an article for the newsletter of the time, condensing his talk.
Fascinating.
So it should be scannable. Yes.
Really fascinating.
Okay. So those are the options that we've got, our golden thread with basic AT. Right.
Also the autogenic 3.0.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yes, Donna and I have been having a conversation about this. Do you want to say anything about it?
I bought it, but I haven't read very much of it.
No. That's what we said. Not anything. I keep reading it and then I don't go anywhere with it, so that speaks volumes to me, really.
I think if we just very quickly say, Luis Gonzalez de Rivera is a Spanish doctor psychotherapist who worked with Luther for quite a few years in Canada years ago. And he used to come to England from time to time and give us wonderful, wonderful insights into neutralization and other things. His English in his Spanish accent is very hard to follow. And once he started, we couldn't stop him. And it would go on and on, and and all the sentences ran together. So he's not easy to understand. And I'm very sad to say that his book is written in rather the same manner, which is such a shame, because if he had got a good English speaker to edit it for him, it would have been different. Having said that, though, he's trying to take autogenic training into now. Donna, I'm going to get this wrong, into a new kind of realm of explanation. Would that be it? And what is now known about functioning of the brain? And
to me, he just seemed to be confused. I haven't read it all, so I'm not, don't quote me on this, but to me, looking at it briefly, it just seemed to be confusing the basic AT and making it more complicated. Which I'm not a fan of. It's very simple what we do, and it's very powerful. Why do we need to think about it more and make it more confusing?
And actually, you've tapped into my thoughts about it when I was thinking about it this morning, that the more theory we give our clients, the more all of this gets totally off on the wrong track. Oh, am I thinking about this? Oh, maybe this is the bit that was, or maybe that's my amygdala and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And we mustn't have that. We have to have the open nothingness for the work to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was one meeting we had, and Ian Ross read something from de Rivera's book about it was a meditation, and it was actually really good. Ian Ross led us through it, and it really did something for me, and that was one of the reasons I bought the book. But then apart from Ian Ross's example from what he read, I found it very difficult to actually read the whole thing. It's not something I could sit down and read from beginning to end.
No, it is a difficult book. So if anybody wants a copy of that, there's one available here. having said that, Ian is adapting the way he teaches AT, taking some of those things on board. And I have a real resistance to doing that. As Donna has just said, don't fix what ain't broke. I mean, what we've got is so astonishing. You know, the story from all of you working with your clients, it's been absolutely brilliant today. Why would we have done anything different?
Exactly. I get upset when people want to change it. I have an honest feeling about de Rivera's writing that book and calling it Autogenics 3, is that is that what it
is? Yes. Yeah.
It's like, okay, so we've had Schultz and then we've got Luther and now we're going to have the Rivera's version of AT. That's the way I saw it. Maybe that's really mean of me thinking like that, but that's just how it felt to me, that he just wanted to put his stamp on
it. Yes, I can agree with that. And that might be born out of misunderstandings. And that I don't really understand what he's on about. And we're none of us saying we've actually read the book. So that's being a bit unfair on him. Mm. But actually, from what we were thumbing through a couple of days ago, Donna, it didn't seem to, he wasn't writing about autogenic exercises and what he now does as a result of this. So it just seems superfluous.
Yeah.
Mm. 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 Right.
I think it speaks volumes that three of us have had it and three of us can't read it.
Read it, yes, exactly. And speaking volumes might be the operative phrase. Right. We must all go on to the next part of our days. Are we in a good place to leave things today? Mm-hmm. Okay. And Bev, you might not have heard, but we've decided we're going to put an extra day in because we've lost a few things today and others in the past, so we can probably very usefully find another day before our November meeting.
And do you need me to send dates in? I heard that bit, but did that change when I need to phone the vet?
Just from after October. We did originally say October, but now it's after the 15th of October.
After the 15th of October.
Yeah, weekend.
Does anybody know how to do the doodle poll or whatever it is?
What?
No, okay. The doodle poll is when you send send a grid over with all the alternative dates and then all the people's names, and then everybody ticks off and you could see who's available when. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Let us, why don't we start that off, shall we, for sometime after October the 15th?
Yeah.
And,
anything for tomorrow other than the module 5, is it, or whatever, 3? Is there anything else we need to do, prepare for tomorrow? It's not the presentation tomorrow, is it? That's for the 15th.
No, we're going to talk about doing it and how to and what we're going to need.
Tutorial 5.
Yeah, that's
tutorial 5. Ideally, but we seem to be kind of, you know, have a read through. I don't, well, you've worked really hard today. Let's just make it a discussion and we'll get through it as quickly as we can. But actually, I don't think those questions that are in the tutorials are so important that we have to dig into them. What do you say, Donna?
I'm finding that a lot of them are coming up as we're talking anyway.
Exactly.
They seem to be something that we can just kind of quickly just go through, because
we can gloss over a lot of it. Yeah. And if any question arises from it, of course, talk it through. Yeah. But look, go and have some restful time between now and tomorrow.
Lovely.
Okay.